Blog Talk Radio.
When Beck was talking the other day about how they had pictures of people that...
I'm on the air. Alright, everybody, it's Monday night, and this is the Constitution Hour brought to you by PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. And forgive me, Miss Linda, I can't help my twisted sense of humor. My wife tells me that I have ruined all of my children because they too have my own cynical sense of humor. But that's okay. We're totally and completely harmless, I can assure you. FT, welcome to the program, Miss Linda, and any other listeners we may have that aren't in the chat room this evening. I want to kind of follow up. Yes, I am definitely that. Definitely the alpha male in the room, more times than not. I want to kind of follow up on what we were talking about last night. And I know that I get a lot of grief when I talk about the Bible and Israel, but I think it's important. And it's important for our current situation, but also it's important for our future situation, whether it be in this life or not. And, you know, we see today, of course, the goings on over in Israel. And I'm not trying to take sides, and I hope people understand that when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I don't have a rooster in the fight, so to speak. I'm not involved. I'm not engaged in what's going on in Israel. The people in Israel have their hands full. But I think the situation there is much like the situation here and in other countries. And it's a situation that is largely guided, driven, fueled by government. I think the majority of people in Israel, whether Jew or otherwise, probably wouldn't have much trouble getting along with one another. It's real easy to hate your neighbor when your whole life you've been told that your neighbor is an evil SOB who's just out to kill you. And I think that goes for both sides. I'm sure the Palestinian people are raised to believe that the Jews are just horrid people who just want to murder them, and vice versa. And of course, anytime either side does anything, it just solidifies that opinion. It justifies that opinion. So I'm not picking sides in the conflict. I'm not here to try and determine that, well, you know, it's the Palestinians' fault or it's the Israelis' fault. I would say I don't care. But I do care, because regardless of how we look at it, it's human beings murdering one another. And I don't care if it's the Israeli government or the Palestinian Hamas organization or the federal government in the United States or the French government perpetrating these things. It really doesn't matter to me. It is a tragedy that some people in our society find it necessary to murder others to try and make their point. It is the ultimate escalation of government. It is the ultimate use of force. And quite honestly, from where I sit, and from where you sit, I'm sure, I don't give a damn what your excuse is if you're launching rockets into my neighborhood. I'm going to come and I'm going to stomp the living snot out of you. And you won't be able to launch any more rockets. And I'm sure both sides feel that way. Imagine, if you will, a large contingent of Americans descending into Maryland and setting up camp and lobbing rockets to Washington, D.C. on a daily basis. How long do you think that would go unchallenged? Oh, I'd say it wouldn't go but about 60 seconds unchallenged in this country. Okay? But more to the point, I want to address our need, or the apparent need, to defend or stand with Israel. And I would have to ask why. That's really what I want to ask of my audience tonight. I want you guys to participate in the show. I don't want it to just be all about my opinions. I have them. I have opinions as to why we believe that we should stand with Israel. But I don't want to hear just I think that XYZ. I want to hear a valid, logical argument of why the United States government should be involved with aiding any of them. Palestinians, Israelis, Arabs, Muslims, Buddhists, Chinese, Hindus, Pakistanis, Indians, any of them. Why should we be involved in funding them? Why should we be involved in shedding our blood and treasure on behalf of these other countries? What purpose does it serve? How does it serve our constitutional interests? And I have Mr. Robert on the line. Robert, how are you, sir?
Mr. Ron, Uncle Ron Golden.
Uncle Ron, it is. Yes, sir.
Well, the only logical explanation that I have is that biblically speaking, charity begins at home.
Okay, well, we don't live in Israel.
Let them fight it amongst themselves and call it a day.
Well, I agree. And one of the things that I've heard my whole life, okay, and I've come to realize that when I hear this, it tells me something. It tells me that the person uttering the phrase doesn't have a clue. They don't understand. They don't know anything about the Middle East. And what I'm talking about is, well, they've been fighting for forever. They've been fighting over there for centuries, and you're not going to change it. Thousands of years. That's horsemanship.
Well, let me ask you a hypothetical question.
Sure.
But the hypothetical question is, I have, if you and I harbored an illegal alien or a terrorist, what would happen to us?
Well, under the current government leadership, we'd probably get a Medal of Freedom or something.
Yeah, but in the past, we would be put in jail, right?
Well, possibly. It depends on who you know. I mean, I'll give you a hypothetical answer. We have no idea because we don't live in a nation of laws. We live in a nation of subjective application of some laws depending on, how we feel at the time.
But Rob, my question is, the health care law and Sharia law has been implemented, so to speak. My beef is this, if we're going to become like Sharia, if we're going to implement Sharia law instead of the Constitution of the United States, I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, my God.
Well, I I'll take issue with that also, and I challenge anyone to provide me an instance in the United States of America where our criminal justice system in any state has used Sharia law as its ruling law to implement criminal justice at all. I don't believe it's happened. I think that some cases have been taken out of context, and it's because people don't understand how the law works, and in particular when it comes to probate or contract law, and others play on that. They use that to stimulate more fear and more animosity. Okay, most Americans, I say most, I'm probably wrong there, let me rephrase that. 47% of Americans, the ones that didn't vote for Obama, have an aversion, a fear of Islam and Muslims. And they also believe, in the back of their mind, that our current president is in fact a Muslim. Some would call him a closet Muslim. Others believe that he's not so closet about it. But nonetheless, there has been this escalation since 1991, quite honestly, since the first time we went into, the Iraq. There has been this escalation for us to fear and loathe Muslims. Now, I'm not going to lie. I don't have any great affinity for Muslims or Islam. I believe, based on what I've read concerning Islam and Muslims, their actions, their past behavior in history, and what their holy book actually says, I think they're a bunch of sadomasochistic fanatics who've got a screw loose. Now, I know I'm not going to win any hearts and minds in the Muslim community with that opinion, but I'm sorry. It's the only one I can hold based on observation of their actions and the way they conduct themselves, historically. I'm not talking about an individual. I'm sure there are many individual Muslims out there that aren't any of those things and that are actually decent people who just happen to believe in some fairy tale religion that seems to at least foster the idea that you should lie and cheat and kill anyone who isn't like you, a Muslim. And even those who are like you, a Muslim, but aren't like you of a pure bloodline, if they're, say, black, the human weeds of the Muslim kingdom, as they call them. So, that's, your hypothetical. I can tell you what would happen to me if I were caught harboring an illegal of any stripe. I would be put in prison, probably sent over to Turkey to be waterboarded, and my home would be given to the illegal. That would probably be my kind of luck.
Well, that's why I brought that hypothetical up, because we're living in dangerous times. The world is changing as we speak, and it already has changed. Number one, number two. I don't know where we're going to stand as of January 1st, if they don't, do a deal with the fiscal cliff. And when Obama starts pressing that button, right now my tax bracket is 19%, okay?
I'm glad you brought that up, because we kind of snuck up on this issue last night, but it was right at the end of the program, and we really didn't have a lot of time left to really delve into it. So explain to me, from your standpoint, what is the fiscal cliff? What is it that worries you about the fiscal cliff? How is it going to impact us?
How's it gonna? Well, I know how it's impacting me now before the fiscal cliff.
Okay.
I just know. At the end of the day, after I pay all my bills, I only have like $400 or $500 extra to spend to last me for the rest of the month. I don't have that much cash anymore.
If I can, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Robert, but What I seem to be hearing you saying, is that because of inflation, because of increased consumer prices, the cost of goods and services going up, everything is going up in price, so you have less and less disposable money left at the end of each week or month, and now here is looming an increase in the amount of taxes that are going to be stolen from you before you even get your money.
Exactly.
So that by the time you get your money, you're going to find yourself in a position where you're unable to buy all the things
exactly.
that are necessary. Okay.
And that's exactly what I'm worried about.
Sure.
That's the same thing what seniors of Florida are saying.
Now.
You know, they're taking a beating. I'm taking a beating. They're taking a beating. We're middle class people here.
The whole country is taking a beating, and I can't complain because I do have extra, but you know I worked for that, and you know if my paycheck wasn't being molested every pay period by the government to fund programs that I vehemently disagree with. I would have more money to spend.
Right.
And my spending, unlike government spending, actually stimulates the economy because I buy products that people actually produce at a job. Those are consumable products. And so, you know, that increases demand and so on. There's a couple of things that we need to look at concerning the fiscal cliff or the so-called fiscal cliff. And I think it's being largely overlooked by, I know, almost every conservative out there or patriot out there, either one. If we look at what is in store, okay, the reason the Republicans are all a quiver over the fiscal cliff, I'm going to pose to you is not because there's going to be an across-the-board tax increase on everyone. And by the way, that everyone includes all of those that aren't currently paying taxes. But the big thing is that there are dramatic cuts in defense spending. And these are automatic cuts that are going to happen because the Republicans in Congress said, look, we will raise the debt ceiling on one condition and one condition only, that we have to begin to cut spending. If you promise to cut spending, then we'll promise to raise the debt ceiling. And the Democrats
that's not going to happen in your wildest dreams.
Well, and you see, and then the Democrats come back with, okay, that's fine, but some of those cuts are going to have to be in defense, and we're going to have a tax increase. It's got to be on the wealthiest Americans. And so the Republicans come back and they say, okay, well, I'll tell you what, we'll agree to across-the-board spending cuts, including defense, but when it comes to the tax increase, we're going to increase taxes, then it has to be an across-the-board tax increase. It can't just be on one segment of our population. To coin a phrase from Mr. President Obama, everybody needs to have a little skin in the game. So that's where we come up with the plan that is now being called the fiscal cliff. That's exactly how it was handed out in Congress. And now you're seeing many of the Republican, so-called conservative members of Congress beginning to waffle. And they're beginning to talk about, well, you know, maybe we're going to have to do some tax increases. Here's the thing. If Congress does absolutely nothing, the Bush tax cuts will expire, okay, which I don't think people really understand. It's not truly a tax cut, but that's a whole nother story. The payroll tax cut that Obama and the Democrats put in place will expire. You've got the next round of Obamacare spooling up, and you're going to have cuts industry-wide in all government programs. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. Because while it will affect you, Robert, there's no doubt in my mind that it will have an impact on you. And it will have an impact on me as well. Everyone is going to feel the pain. But those who don't pay any taxes currently, those who live solely on government programs, they are going to feel the pinch as well. And I think that's only fitting. What, you know, if I had a nickel for every time I heard someone say that we should pay our fair share, I would be a Bill Gates. I would be a multi-billionaire.
How don't I know?
So I want people to understand what fair share really means. And quite honestly, you know, I disagree with the whole tax scheme to begin with, and especially since we're running a fairy tale monopoly money system, there's no reason to have taxation of any kind under this fairy tale monetary system we're living in. But if we truly have an honest monetary system and we felt it necessary to tax, then I think that a flat rate of, you know, 2%, 5%, 10%, whatever the magic number is, should be instituted across the board, so that we're not playing, as my parents used to say, we're not playing favorites. Okay.
Would you like to hear my magic number?
Sure.
I say 15, 15, 12 across the board.
That's not a magic number. That's two magic numbers. I don't know what the 15, 15, 12 is all about. Why the different percentages? And how is that applicable?
You know, I mean, because, you know, Perry was going for 20, you know, and Herman Cain was going for 9. So let's do the median. Let's do the median of the two.
You know, you started part of the conversation earlier with biblically speaking. Now, I'm going to come back to you that biblically speaking, God only demanded 10%. So where in the hell do you get the hubris to presume that you need more than God?
Well, because
Mr. Congressman,
because of hyperinflation.
Well, I haven't seen any hyperinflation yet.
Because everything, I tell you, I'll give you a concrete answer. And the answer is everything's becoming, the basic necessities of life is becoming a luxury now. It's a luxury. Just living, grocery shopping, medicines, putting gas in your car, it's nothing but a luxury these days. So I figure with a 15-15-12, you cover the luxury tax right there, and it's coming off the top. That's how I feel.
I understand. I want to bring Miss Linda in. She's been waiting very patiently. Linda, how are you?
Fine. How's it going, guys? Hi, Robert. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Miss Linda. How you doing?
Going well.
We're hanging in there. Well, I think that Robert, you know, he's talking about the inflationary situation we're under already. I mean, to me, it's the tip of the iceberg. It's going to get much, much worse because, you know, I've said it before, 95% of those clowns in both houses need to be gone, as far as I'm concerned. And, of course, the dishonest monetary system, the stupid printing of money, which is causing all of this problem. And if they... From what I was understanding from the economists, if they keep doing the QE3, they're artificially propping up this evil system, and they're keeping the interest rates low. And if this bubble bursts, all hell's going to break loose. I mean, no one's going to be able to afford anything.
Well, it's going to be a currency bubble, and I know there are those out there that are really touting the hyperinflation thing, and I'm not convinced that we're going to have hyperinflation. I think you may see something different. But going back to, you know, I wish to God we could have some truth in advertising. I really like my idea about mandating that anyone running for public office has to wear a suit like they do in NASCAR, with a patch for every sponsor that's donating money to them. You know, any corporate sponsor, they've got to put a patch on. Okay?
Absolutely.
And then we need to have some truth in advertising, because if there were truth in advertising, what Congress would do was they would come out on national television. You would have the House Democrat leader and the House Republican leader come out together and say to the American people, you know, we've tried everything else, so now we've decided it's time that we try some honesty. And the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, that we underestimated our ability to spend frivolous amounts of money. And we've not stolen enough money from you poor bastards to cover the cost. So
exactly.
You're going to have to dig deep and pony up some more cash so that we can cover the cost of all these ridiculous programs that we told you you just had to have.
Yep, that is the truth. And they won't tell you the truth.
I have an idea how they can come up with that, Ron. Obama can put on a Christmas program and say Christmas carols and have the, you know, like the Jerry Lewis telethon.
I want to see him lighting the menorah.
You know, really, I mean, what else do we have left?
Well, you know, this is what they've been doing for how many years and decades and upon decades, is they're very good at hiding all of the real truths from the American people, because if the American people actually knew what was really going on, those people would be lynched tomorrow.
Well,
I'm not advocating that over the airwaves, but that would be what would happen.
You know something else they're really good at, Linda? They're really good at pretending to be terribly intelligent while being completely effing stupid. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean,
my God,
look at Pelosi and Wasserman Schultz if you need evidence.
Oh, my gosh.
Your girlfriend, Wasserman Schultz.
I'm reading an article from, I think, one of Robert's relatives, Paul Krugman.
Who?
Paul Krugman.
One of my relatives.
Yeah, he did an op-ed column, and evidently Krugman fancies himself an economist, okay, and has for some time, and he wrote an article, The Twinkie Manifesto. And, of course, he used the Twinkie debacle.
Right.
To segue into the golden years of the United States of America, the 1950s, right? Everyone knows that the 1950s was an idealized time in the United States of America, and he makes an argument that the reason that the 50s were so fantabulous was because we had all kinds of unions and the top tax rate was 91%.
Oh, my God.
Tax rate was what? 91%?
Yep, 91% was the top tax rate. And that, in Krugman's twisted ideology, is what made the 1950s so prosperous.
Oh, my God.
Never mind that during the 1950s, we were still on something called a gold standard, and Americans still had actual hard money, silver coinage.
Sure.
And we hadn't bastardized our monetary system fully yet. I mean, my God, we're only talking, what, less than 20 years since Roosevelt commandeered all the actual gold that was privately mm-hmm. held in the United States. And we were coming out of World War II and headed into the Korean conflict while we were pussyfooting about over in Iran, trying to get involved in their internal government affairs. So there were a lot of things going on in the 1950s. And the 1950s, for a lot of people that don't realize it, was the time of an absolute technological explosion that happened in this country. You had, you know, telephones, televisions, refrigerators, things were moving at breakneck speed in the 50s. And also the United States government was a net lender to foreign economies many of which were destroyed during World War II. So there were a lot of things going on. And unemployment, real unemployment in the 1950s, stood at an actual 3%.
Wow.
So, and the 91% top tax rate was a gradual rate, you know, and it was only on the, you know, if you made up to, and I'm going to make up some numbers, if you made up to $60,000 a year, you paid, you know, 30% on the first $50,000, and the next $10,000 you paid an additional 10%, so you paid 40% on that, and then when it went up to $70,000, you paid an additional 20%. And on until you got all the way up to 91%. So the 91% wasn't on the total. It was incremental.
Right.
Nonetheless, it was ridiculous. And the reason it's ridiculous is that it stymies growth. It stymies production.
Of course it does.
It is confiscatory. It is confiscating people's wealth. So a wealthy businessman or entrepreneur is not going to achieve a point where he gets to 91% if he can help it, right? I mean, why in the hell would you? I worked as an automotive mechanic or technician, whichever way you want to say it. I'm kind of old school, so I still say mechanic, but nonetheless, I don't want to split hairs. I was paid on flat rate labor, and the way flat rate labor works is when you go to have a repair done on your car, there's a labor guide. And the labor guide tells you approximately how long it should take a competent mechanic to perform a specific procedure. Okay? So if the book says it takes 1 hour to perform that procedure, and I do it in 30 minutes, I still get paid for 1 hour. You still get billed for 1 hour. That's the way it works.
Now, and if we did that in the healthcare profession, as for me going into person, someone giving somebody a bath or a shower or whatnot.
You do that.
If I did it in half an hour, I was only allowed, even though I was supposed to stay an hour, even if I did stay an hour, if I left at that half an hour time, I would be accused of Medicare fraud.
Well, that's true, and you can thank your government and the regulatory system for that. The same as you could, I mean, I can show you things in the automotive repair unions, especially in California, that's just anti-productive, okay? And that's really the point. My point is this. It didn't take dumb old me very long to figure out, okay, that the last job I had as a mechanic, I was paid $29.50 an hour flat rate. Now, I figured out real quick that if I turned flat rate more than 42 hours a week, I was getting paid a net $8.50 an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't go up until I cleared 50-some-odd hours a week, and then it only went up by about 50 or 60 cents an hour. So little old me, I'm sitting there looking at my paycheck, okay? And I'm like, well, gee, I know last week I turned 38 hours and I took home $980. And this week I turned 62 hours and I took home $1,035. Why am I killing myself to turn that extra 20 hours for no pay?
Exactly. Oh, I've been there when I used to work. I know.
Look, they hated me because I would show up on Monday and I would work Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And by Wednesday, I had my 42 hours done. And I would say, guys, you know, if you need me, you know, call me. Here's my cell number. I'm going to go play some golf. And, Robert, in the medical industry, you do have the same thing. Doctors fully understand billable hours. Anyone that has been to their doctor's office for an appointment fully understands billable hours, because when you sit in the waiting room for an hour and you get to go back and sit on the table in your little paper gown with your behind hanging out in the wind, and you notice as you're walking down the hall, there's six other rooms, and there's a someone in all the other five rooms, plus the room you're in, and the doctor breezes in for 10 minutes and breezes on to the next room. He's billing for an hour's time at each stop.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And by the time he's done with all six of those rooms, at 10 minutes per room, that's 1 hour. And it's called billable hours.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Part
what
of the
mess we're in.
Well, we've created
and
this.
Lady.
You know, Ron Paul in that clip I played last night talked about how horrible healthcare is now that we've been under managed care.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the government for 40 years now, we see the net result, okay? And I'm not going to fault the doctors. They've learned how to work the system, and I don't blame them. Because the government tries to throw hurdles and roadblocks in front of them.
Yeah, and this Obamacare is going to make it 10,000 times worse. It's just a nightmare. It's probably one of the most evil things. Oh, my God.
I just saw an article. I didn't have a chance to read it, but I want to say that Florida has 30,000 physicians that are leaving.
They're leaving the state, right?
Yep. And the profession.
They're bailing out of California, too. Oh,
and
yeah,
the
I know.
Profession.
You
That's
bet.
A hell of a lot of medical people.
You know why they're doing it, don't you? Because
well, sure.
They know that once the state, when his evil stuff takes place, they're going to force these guys to work whether they want to or not, just like Hitler did. Bastard.
Well, and when you look at the Medicare and Medicaid fraud that goes on out there, okay, the legitimate doctors, the guys that are actually trying to do, you know, the right thing and do the job, their hands are tied and they've got to jump through so many hoops. That
oh,
it's just not, sickening. It's not worth it. And then good luck getting paid in the end, for God's sakes. You
know,
when you have to virtually threaten to sue the provider, i.e. government,
mm-hmm.
or your state, oh, wait, you can't because they're sovereign immunity, so you can't sue them. I mean, some of these guys never get paid. The biggest deadbeat in this country is the federal government, followed by the state governments.
I know. The states are doing – well, now, did you get a chance to see any portion of the nullification deal that I sent?
I did not. Anytime you send me stuff that's based on Facebook, I can't do anything with it because I'm not on Facebook and I refuse to get on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
that makes sense. Anyway,
no offense, but.
No. The only way to go then is if I can try to copy a link and get it to you that way. But anyway, there's a lot of people advocating for that measure because if the 10th Amendment still has any water to it at all, that is one way. And I know Texas has done it with the NDAA, and I think there were three states, Texas may have been one of them, that they are not participating in this Medicare exchange with the federal government, and they're taking steps to nullify things that they don't agree with. Because
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you my 2 cents worth on this right now because I've said this before. Okay, not about the specific provision because I didn't know that specific provision. I'm still not fully versed in exactly how it works, but I do understand the basic outline of it. And what you're talking about is that in order to service Obamacare and institute it within an individual state, the state has to set up what's known as a state healthcare exchange.
Right.
And it will be run much like Medicaid is run now. And Medicare, federal tax dollars will go into the state, or federal dollars will go
mm-hmm.
into the state, and the state will put that into a fund, and then the state has to match a certain percentage of that fund, and then that money will be used to fund health care in the state. The problem...
Is that $750 billion?
Well, hang on a minute. Okay, I told you guys, we've talked about this healthcare thing before, and there's a couple of things that I know without a shadow of a doubt, okay? And I don't have to read the whole damn healthcare bill. I didn't have to read all the tax code. I didn't have to read a whole bunch of case law to figure this stuff out. The first thing I told you was that the Supreme Court is no way, shape, or form going to rule against Obamacare because they're going to rule it's a tax, and they're going to say it's constitutional. And by God, that's exactly what they did. Even though the government fought tooth and nail and said, nope, 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 we're not going to make that argument. Bull crap. I don't care if they made the argument or not. The court brought it up because it's apparent that that's exactly what it is. And the reason that they're going to rule it's constitutional is because if they ruled otherwise, then Social Security and Medicare comes under direct scrutiny immediately. Number two, the other thing that I've said from the very get-go is I don't care what's written in this damn health care bill. It is designed from the very beginning. It is designed to force us into a single-payer federal government system. Now, what do you suppose will happen if a majority of the states refuse the state-run healthcare exchange and the federal government cannot, they can't force it? What are they going to do? They're going to say, well, okay, now we, you know, as Pelosi said, we're going to have to read it. We're going to have to pass it to see what's in it. Okay? Well, now that we've passed it and tried to implement it, we realize the shortfall. And guess what, boys and girls? That bill originated in the House, and now they have a better majority in the Senate, and they can put forth amendments to the bill to fix how it's funded, and you're going to end up, I don't care by hook or by crook, you're going to end up with a single-payer system, which is what they wanted all along.
All along.
I told you that when I was first on the show.
So I honestly don't think that it's going to matter one damned bit whether the states do or don't go along with it. I think if the states don't go along with it, which is exactly what they that's what's in the bill. So you can rest assured that was intentional. You know, FDR said nothing in government happens by accident.
That's for sure. He should know.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. So I heard something else on one of the talk shows today. They were talking about the Hostess Twinkie guys, you know, and all this stuff. And, of course, there was a lot of blame placed on the unions, which I am not in favor of unions, you know, holding everybody hostage.
I'm not in favor of organized extortion either. The government does it quite well, though.
Yeah, and then we got the unions on top of it. But there was also something that was in the mix, that the price, if you buy sugar inside the United States, there's a tariff. Yeah, tariff. And that they were trying to save some farmers in Florida, so the whole country.
Look, there are huge farm subsidies on sugar. You know, holy cow. You know, if we took the time, or if we had the time, to actually go and look into all the subsidies that are on all the products that we consume. If you think sugar has got subsidies, you ought to look into milk.
Oh, yeah. This is horrible what they've done. You know, and then also they were talking about, this is why many of the chocolate factories moved to Canada, because they can buy sugar without the tariffs, and the same reason Twinkies is going to have part of their plants, I guess, going to Mexico, because they can buy sugar on the open market and not have all this nonsense.
Yeah, they're not paying these ungodly sums.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I don't know what the exact price is, but the subsidy so that they can keep sugar prices artificially high. So that the farmers producing sugar crop here in the U.S. can do so without going bankrupt. And why would they go bankrupt? Because the government has put all these other regulatory fees and schemes in place. I mean, it's a cyclical wheel. It just keeps coming around and kicking them in the back of the head. If they would just step out of the damn way, and you can go all the way back to the beginning of our country and see these tariffs that are put in place.
Right.
And they're done with the best of intentions, trying to, quote-unquote, level the playing field. It's the same damn thing we do with taxes, right? We're trying to level the playing field, so we're going to take more money from the rich guy, percentage-wise, than we do from the little poor guy, to level the playing field and make it fair and everyone's fair share. Well, it's bullcrap, and it never ends up working that way.
Yeah, how's it going to work out when all these rich guys have to do whatever they have to do, or the corporations and everybody passes their
when they take their toys and go home?
Yeah, they do that too. And then how's that going to work for the unemployment numbers? I mean, the whole thing is just, there's no logic to what's going on here. There's just none. There's no Ayn Rand, von Mises logic in economics. It's evil. I can't believe.
And there's truly, if you really get down to it, there truly is no logic to economics, period. Whether it's Mises or Keynesian or whoever it is,
mm-hmm.
I think the Austrians in the von Mises tradition come closest to recognizing the problem, and that is that it's too complex, and every bit of economics, every scintilla of economics rests solely on human emotion, and we know how stable and predictable that is.
Well,
it's not.
Okay, but let's all that part aside, if you, whoever you're listening to, whether it's John Locke or Ayn Rand Center or any of these people who study this stuff, and they see how things work, and go way back before the stupid creature from Jekyll Island, and even further beyond that, where we may have had real capitalism and a free market system in this country, which system works the best? When you get that stupid government off of our backs and their boots off our necks, the free market will work just fine if you let people interact freely with each other. Then you got the EPA, and then you got the UN Agenda 21. My head's going to explode.
Well, and you see, here's the thing. Here's where the fundamental flaw, to me, lies in the system. When we look back at the early times, and those guys that we were talking about last night,
mm-hmm.
the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, right? Now, there's no doubt that those men brought a lot of good things for the country. Electric lights, the railroad, kerosene, crude oil, the basis of our monetary system now. Those are all good things, and those were innovations that really helped fuel the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Where we fall down is that our justice system is subject to corruption. And I don't know how you get around that, because human beings are subject to be corruptible. And what I mean by that is, we didn't need, even back in the time of, you know, the 1890s and the rise of J.P. Morgan and all these great industrial capitalists, there was no need for government regulation. We had criminal laws on the books to prosecute them, the things that they did that were outside of the law. And the only way they avoided prosecution is because of a corrupt governmental system that was in place, where bribes were taken, people were paid off, and cases never made it to court, or judges were bought off.
Sure.
You know, the law itself is sufficient. It's just like the environment. I don't know why the conservative side of the aisle doesn't more fully embrace the environmental issues, not from a regulatory scheme, but from the aspect of, look, we have laws on the books.
Yeah.
If some person, whether that person be a corporation or an actual individual human being, is causing damage to your person or property, you have recourse in the law, for God's sake.
Absolutely. Exactly. So why are we in this circle jerk to begin with? I just know that things have to change, and I don't know like I said, I'm just going to...
It's like that movie. It's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah. Well, damn it.
Yes, Robert.
I was wondering, what was the outcome of Gary Johnson's... Did you hear anything about the independent votes? Was that accountable? I don't know.
I think if memory serves me, he got around 1% of the vote, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, that's
what Mike
from Hot Seat was saying. Yeah.
I didn't really pay any attention to it, and it cracks me up to see all these wham babies and sore losers out there, grasping at straws. Oh, it's voter fraud and this and that and the other, all trying to legitimize why their guy lost. What a bunch of crap, I mean, seriously. I honestly believe that the voter fraud and cheating is so rampant on both sides that they actually probably cancel each other out.
I think that's,
I mean, they're all a bunch of snakes, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think Johnson is, but the American people aren't willing or ready for an actual man or woman of integrity to be in office.
Candidate.
They don't.
Yeah.
People don't want to know the truth, Robert. They don't want to know the truth.
I go through that every day.
I go through it minute by minute.
They want to go to 7-Eleven and get a Slurpee or a Big Gulp and a 12-pack of beer and go home and beat their wife and watch American Idol or Dancing with the Stars, no offense, Linda, or Jerry Springer or The View or whatever the hell it is they're into.
And they
just don't want anything else.
These guys, I'm telling you, they're like those three monkeys, with the hands over the eyes, the lips and the ears. That's what I see in California on a daily basis. It drives me nuts.
And they'll find some pet cause to get involved with, and they'll go out there, rah-rah, and cheerlead and donate money and feel like they're making a difference.
I know.
And they're not making a damn bit of difference, and they're just beating their head against the wall, but they feel good about it. And that's all that matters to them.
Oh, we're in such a sorry state, aren't we? Oh.
It's exactly like the allegory of the cave. When the guy comes back in, he's screaming his head off, oh, my God, and they're looking at him like, let's kill him. He's nuts. He's lost his mind. He's flipped his lid.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
don't have a clue. They can't see anything other than what's on the screen in front of them.
I know. It's worse than the Alinsky, tactic.
Oh.
It's crazy. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's getting worse. I don't know what the end result of this is going to be.
It's going to be a mess.
Well, if I see 2016, I'll be happy.
I actually heard, and I downloaded the clip, but I didn't get a chance to download it into the studio. One guy from Huffington Post, and
mm-hmm.
if I thought for a minute that it would make a scintilla of difference, I would write him, but it's a waste of my time and effort. But this guy was talking about the situation in Gaza and Israel.
Right.
And he says, I think a lot of us just want to see President Obama come out and say, look, Israel, we understand you have a right to defend yourself, but, you have to be the bigger man in the room. After all, you have a superior military power, and if you want to be recognized as a nation state government, then you have to show some restraint and not repay violence with violence and blah, 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 blah. And I thought, I wonder if you would feel the same way if the Mexicans were lobbing rockets into your effing studio in Los Angeles, you bleeding moron.
Yeah, I know.
I'm betting he would feel a little bit differently than that, But again, this is exactly why we should not be getting involved in the affairs of other nations. Okay?
Exactly.
We can sit back and play the retarded armchair quarterback all day long, but that doesn't put you in the situation on the ground where it's going on. And even those people, I'm going to posit to you right now that even those people who are right there in the neighborhood don't have any clue what's going on, because, you know, if you're sitting in your house watching, you know, the Goyim on Let's Make a Deal, and a Palestinian rocket, you know, lands in your neighbor's house and kills them, what is your viewpoint of what just happened? You know, those murderous bastards, they're no good. That's what you've been told your whole life by your government, right? And then when the Israelis retaliate and poof, oh, crap, they hit a mosque and you live next door to the mosque. I mean, where does it end? It never ends. It's always the other guy's fault. It's always going to be the other guy's fault. And when these people come out and tell me that they've been fighting over there forever and it's never going to change, I know that they don't know what they're talking about, because Israel and the Palestinians have been fighting since about 1923, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Give and take. And in 1948, Israel was recognized as a nation state. And then you got, what was it, 1967, Robert, the Yom
mm-hmm.
Kippur?
Yes.
Okay. And there's
another
been
day war.
Yeah, there's been exchanges going back and forth and since that time. But that's not centuries, guys.
Right.
That's 1948 till now. That's not forever. There was fighting going on in Jerusalem during the Crusades, but that was between the Christian nation,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Christians, the Christian Crusaders and the Muslims, the Orthodox Russians and the Muslims. you know,
yep.
it wasn't the Jews and the Palestinians all this time. Let's take it back to 70 AD. The Jews were destroyed. Israel was destroyed by the Romans. There was a brief uprising in 135 AD, the Khobar Uprising, where the Romans came back in and killed a few hundred thousand and plowed the ground of Jerusalem once again, just to make a point. They erected a temple to one of the moon god or something. I don't know what the hell it was. But from that point forward, 135 AD forward, there was not a lot going on over in Jerusalem. You know, there wasn't this resettlement of the Holy Land or anything going on. That just, it's fantasy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, did I hear you correctly? Did you use the word Goyim?
I did.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of you, Ron.
Yeah,
well, you
we
know, when you start getting into the, and that's something that I haven't studied a lot, and I don't know a lot about, but I do know enough to know that when you start getting into the Talmudic or Talmudic or however the hell you say it, Jews,
said it correctly.
That is where you start getting into the Zionist, the true Zionism. And it's very close. It's very, very similar to Islam.
Oh, man.
Am I wrong, Robert?
Well, that's why I quit going, Ron. I basically quit going because it was just, you know,
I mean, from what I understand, I mean, there's a distinct difference between the Torah and the Talmud.
Oh, yeah.
The Talmudic Jews believe a lot along the same lines as the Muslims, you know, that it's okay, and in fact it's expected that you lie, cheat, and steal to someone who's not of your faith or race.
Wow.
And if you kill them, well, that's okay, because really they're nothing more than pigs anyway.
Lord.
But see, you can't talk about that without being an anti-Semite.
I'm a Jewish anti-Semite.
And you know, that gets into this whole Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is Zionism in a nutshell. It is socialist Nazism on steroids.
Wow.
But the Kabbalah to me is so is mystifying. It's a mystifying monologue, so to speak.
Well, that's because it's based on Robert. That's because it's based on an occult ideology, the mystery religion. That's what the Kabbalah is based on. That gets you. That kicks the doors wide open on the whole ideology of the three pillars, mm-hmm. the tree of life and Boaz and Yaakov. Right.
It's just like when the Orthodox rabbi came to my house and wanted to protect my house, right? He wanted to, made new improvements on my home. And he says, I need to put some mezuzahs to bless your house, right? Which is the five books of Moses that took the Torah to put all around my doors. And he told me before it was for free. And then all of a sudden he was going to charge me. So you know what he charged me? He charged me $300.
You know what you should have told him, Robert?
I thought you were going to bless this house for free, and I would have to pay you $300.
You know what I'd have told him? Yeah. Oh God.
That was my donation of the year, $300.
Robert, he's lucky I wasn't there. I would have said, "Why, Rabbi? I didn't know you were Catholic."
Oh God.
And he would have said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, this is like buying indulgences from the church, right? I mean,
Wow.
It's okay to go out and visit the prostitute. Just pay, all you got to do is buy a couple of indulgences. You can take a bottle of whiskey with you, too."
Ron?
Yes, sir.
Between my yard man and him, I hardly can pay my taxes.
Yeah. Between the rabbi and the yard man, I can barely afford the pool boy.
Oh, my Lord. I swear to God. I just got tired of people. People are just like, it's amazing that I've noticed a lot. People are hungry. They're knocking on doors wanting to work, Can I do this? Can I do that? Can I do this for you? Can I do that for you?
Well, this brings up something I was thinking about on my way home tonight, And we talk about, our advances and how much better we live now than our parents did or their parents did or, the early Americans did in the 1700s to the 1800s, when they were mostly farmers. And I thought, really? Do we really? Because how do we spend our time, most of us?
Right.
Everyone's in a hurry. We're always in a hurry to get things done. And we rush around trying to get everything done. For what purpose? So that we can have a few minutes of quiet time. And then we're inundated. That quiet time really isn't quiet time. Hell, I've gone on vacation, go down to Florida, where I should just be sitting on the beach or sitting by the pool and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. I can't. I got to be on the internet. I got to be doing something because I'm used to just constantly being occupied.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I think that the time we spent in Delaney was probably three of the best relaxation days of my life. My cell phone couldn't get a cell tower, which was fine. We only had music from, a boombox. We didn't have any dang TVs. It was bliss.
Let me tell you, when we got there and my wife and I, we were looking at each other and she looked at me and she's like, I am not staying here. And I said, why? There's no air conditioning. There's no this. I'm like, it's 3 days. We'll be fine. What? I was more comfortable. I was at home. Very, very much at ease. It was very, very cool. And it took me back to something that I haven't had in a very long time. I grew up on a farm and everybody, we came together every morning and had breakfast, every afternoon and had lunch, and every evening and had supper. And the pace of things was much, much slower. And you didn't waste energy doing things that didn't produce
right.
Something useful.
Of value or pleasure. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't miss the TV. I didn't miss the internet. I, believe me, it was great to get away from all that nonsense. It was just, wow, it was a blessing. Was,
you know, I mean, the internet, the internet and the computer has replaced for me television. I just occasionally I get bored, I get tired. You know, there's nothing on the internet, so I'll go turn on the TV and watch nothing on TV. Once
well,
in a blue moon, there'll be a program like the other night when they had that whole series of The Men That Built
mm-hmm.
America. That intrigued me because I know what I've read, and
mm-hmm.
I always like to see it, you know, the same topic from a different viewpoint. So,
yeah, well,
since
most of the time the television is a wasteland, that's when I catch up on my reading on the, you know, regular books with bound covers, you know, that kind of thing. a lot of people don't do. But, you know, I mean, these are books that have come to us through people who are already dead and gone. But, boy, they can speak volumes. I'm telling you, these things are so relevant for today. And this is what's good about history and even the economic side, like Road to Serfdom or anything written by the von Mises or, I mean, go back further, you know. It's vital. We need to know these things.
Yeah. And, you know,
you can't make this rational decisions.
I have, of late, and you guys know, I've been more caught up in my projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got this, you know, table saw that I've built a cabinet
yeah.
for, and I've got my router set up now, and my wife had me installing, you know, a laminate floor in our dining room. And
right.
over the weekend, I did the kitchen, and we've got a breakfast area in the kitchen. I started at 9 o'clock in the morning, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't stop until 6:20 that night.
Wow.
And I'm here to tell you the next day, and the only reason I stopped is I ran out of material. And I was about 3 boxes short of being finished.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I got up, I could barely walk. My thighs are still screaming at me. because I haven't used them like that in a long time. Well, definitely out of shape, but a lot of up, down, you know, stand up.
Sure.
Get back down on the
yeah.
floor, stand up, get back down, and then up and down 2 flights of stairs to the saw to make special cuts. And holy cow. But you
wow.
know what? It was absolutely rewarding. And I got more out of doing that, more enjoyment out of doing that
cool.
than most anything I've done in the last year, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a result. My house looks better. My kitchen looks wonderful.
Super.
So I'm really enjoying it. And
awesome.
I do need to...
You remodeled your whole kitchen?
I haven't remodeled the whole kitchen yet, but I am getting everything in order. My next project is probably going to be building new cabinets for the kitchen, which is it's quite an undertaking, actually.
I'm sure it is.
I'm no carpenter, but I'm learning. So,
well, that's great. I heard that's one of the hardest things to do.
I dread doing mine.
To get them perfect and to make them square and all that.
It has to be perfect. There's, you know.
No room for error.
Yeah, you can hide stuff doing a floor, you know, with some trim work and stuff. You can hide little errors here and there. Not so on a cabinet. There's no room for error.
Absolutely.
Ron, I wish you could take some time off and help me with my house.
Well, Robert, I would love to. I mean, I find I really enjoy it. And I think it's more because it's not something that I have to do. You know what I mean? It seems like everything in life now is something I have to do.
I need to tear
yep.
up my rugs, and I need to tile or put hardwood, one or two. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Well, I'm telling you what, Robert, I don't know which room you're talking about. If you're talking about your living room there, I looked at, we have the same dilemma. The carpet in my house has been here since 2001 when the house was built, and been through,
right,
you know, three kids growing up and two dogs and now six grandkids. So it's time for it to go. And,
yeah, right.
And that's what prompted, you know, this little project. And the next thing we're going to do is the living room, which is, it's probably 25 by, you know, 20.
Wow. Are you going to tile it, or are you going to put hardwood?
Neither. I'm going to put this laminate down. It's a pergo laminate floor.
Oh, yeah.
That's what everybody's telling me, to go pergo laminate.
I'm telling you, it looks like hardwood.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff is 12 millimeters thick. It has the padding on the back, and it's just as easy as pie to install.
And they're beautiful. You get the
just
right color.
Just snaps together. Yeah, and it's got a 30-year warranty.
Yeah, they last.
Wow.
30-year warranty for wear. It's phenomenal.
Are you gonna do your kitchen that way too?
Well, I've already done the kitchen. I did the kitchen and the dining room. Yep.
Pergo laminate.
Yep. It was $35.80 a box at Home Depot.
It's much cheaper than the real wood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to stain it. You don't have to mess with it. You put it down, and it's there,
yeah,
and it's got
done.
A 30-year warranty against wear. What's not to like?
Wow.
Yeah, and it's easy to clean, because my sister has it in her house.
Yeah,
it's
the
beautiful.
Biggest thing is you got to make sure your floor is level. You know, if you got uneven in the floor, then you need to level the floor, and they make stuff to do that. You pour on the floor and squeegee it out, and it fills the low spots, let it cure, and then go to town.
Yep.
And literally, it took me 2 days to do the dining room. It took me 2 days to do the kitchen and the breakfast area. And that's,
wow.
You know, that's because I had to pull out the refrigerator and the stove. I had to do it. I had to make a lot of special cuts to get inside of a pantry, because she wanted
mm-hmm.
me to do the floor in the pantry as well. So it all flows. It flows from my dining room all the
nice.
Way through the kitchen into the breakfast area. It's all one seamless floor.
Oh, well, you just
right.
added value to your home.
Yeah. And you know what? I really don't care about the value added to the home as much as I do. It looks nice. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, the linoleum and the carpet, because our dining room was carpeted. It was horrible. It was just horrible.
Almost 12 years old. Yeah, my carpet's been in since I moved in 2002, and God only knows how long it was there beforehand.
Not trying to advertise for the local Home Depot, but if you're willing to move all your furniture out of the room that you want the laminate in, if you move all the furniture,
right.
tear up the old carpet and haul it off, they will come install the entire floor for $400.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think to do the kitchen and the living room, I did it all myself, but I think for the materials, it cost us about $800, $800 or $900.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is truly unbelievable.
And it's probably going to cost me right at $1,280 to do my living room, because
cool.
it's large, but.
See, I was fighting against tile, but now that I think you.
Tile's nice. Tile's very nice. The one thing you got to watch with the laminate is water.
That's what I'm worried about. There's so much water here in Florida, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, with you having a pool, you just have to be conscious not to leave water pooled up standing on the laminate, because eventually where the boards lock together, it'll
mm-hmm.
seep its way down in there, and it'll ruin the floor eventually. So as long as you keep it cleaned up, you know, if you get water on it, you wipe it up. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Miss Linda, besides that, I can understand why you don't want to leave California. I mean, I actually had a good time out there.
You know, here's the thing.
Y'all sharing a joint?
Yeah, California has some of the best weather in the anywhere. We've got beautiful beaches, you know, especially in Oceanside where we are. The temperatures are always mild. We don't get snow here. We don't have hurricanes. We don't, you know, of course, the earthquakes. But San Diego is not in that line like Frisco and L.A. where they get real bad ones. But
right.
It's the liberalism. It's the Governor Brown. They're tripling our vehicle license fees every year. They've got cap and trade. They're pushing every progressive thing down our throats faster than, you know, a locomotive. It's nuts. I live in a blue state. I'm surrounded by libtards. I can't take it anymore. It's making me crazy.
You know,
I can understand why. I mean, you can just tell that they're facing. I mean, how hateful. And I mean,
oh, you were in L.A.
But,
that's a mess. I got out of that mess. San Diego's another story. I mean, libtards, but
it reminds me of the song by David Allan Coe, where, you know, if that ain't country, I'll kiss your arse. But he was talking about his dad bought their house on the GI Bill, but his daddy said it wasn't worth all he had to kill to get it.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, California, there's no doubt it's beautiful. The weather's perfect. But does that outweigh all the garbage that comes with
it? Yeah, and the sad part is when I grew up in it from the age of about five, and it took them, like I'd say, about 40 to 42 years, and they've destroyed it. And a lot of it is with all of the policies coming out of D.C., with the open borders. They let them come through. They've got four or five sanctuary cities in the state. Sacramento is one of the most corrupt, libtard. They have a supermajority of Democrats up there now. It's a mess. We've got a friggin' fascist for a San Diego mayor now.
Well, I'll tell you what.
My city, unbelievable.
I'm starting to get some renewed faith in France, my God.
Except for the south of France, where the Muslims took over.
Well, yeah, but let me tell you, the French are starting to regret that, and now I see that there were huge protests when they put up a gay marriage bill.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh, they're out in the streets protesting. There may be hope yet for those socialist bastards.
Well,
now if we can just get their women to shave their legs and their armpits, you know,
oh my Lord.
And take a bath once a week, you know, there might be some hope for them.
Oh, God, Ron, you're too funny.
Well,
I'm going to let you wrap it up, and thanks for taking my call. Robert, it was great to hear from you. And anyone who didn't hear earlier, Yola misses us, and she loves us, and she's just resting. So we're praying for her.
Give Yola my best. How's Michael Magic doing? I haven't heard of him. I've been trying to call him.
I know.
Him
I got
to
talk. I don't know if he did a show the other day because I was tired.
Oh,
and I
called in Saturday. There was no show.
Okay. All right. All right, guys. Talk to you later, and I'm going to go to the chat room, and God bless.
All right. God bless.
God bless you.
Okay, bye.
And Robert, I want to thank you for calling in. And, you know, I hate to be redundant, but you guys know me by now. I love to beat the dead horse. And sometimes I get on a kick and I just can't stop. And I just can't get the lyrics of this song out of my head. So I'm going to play it again.
Oh, my gosh. The best song.
No. Listen to the words of this song, okay? It's called War Pigs.
War Pigs.
Yes, by Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh my God, Black Sabbath.
But listen to the lyrics. And this was written and played in 1970, and it's just as appropriate today. We'll see you guys on the show, and I'm going to lead you out with some War Pigs.
War Pigs.
gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. Stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees of war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sin.